Good morning, Eurovision. You're listening to ESC Go. My name is Felix. The Eurovision Song Contest 2021 is over and Italy has won for the first time in 31 years. And there's a lot to talk about. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning from London.
So we had a few hours to digest what happened on Saturday. How was it for you?
Mostly very good, actually. I mean, I find myself having a really good time. Again, that feeling of Eurovision is back, you know, came through the entire show. I was loving sharing it with people in our chat room on the website, even though normally I might be with friends in real life. And, you know, getting messages from all kinds of friends, you know, just generally joining in with the fun, to be honest, and mostly being very positive about the contest, which is really cool. Yeah. So yeah, I had a good time on Saturday, and I've had a good time digesting all the reactions since as well.
Yeah, I also thought this was the best you see in recent years, I think. And the main winner for me of the night was Eurovision Song Contest itself.
Yep, absolutely that. Absolutely. Not just that it's back, but it's back in such strong style as well. I mean, really, really strong 26 song lineup.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I know we'll come on to talk about the voting, but, you know, let's be honest. The United Kingdom getting zero this year. I mean, James Newman's song, if you compare it with the last time the United Kingdom got zero with Gemini. I mean, James Newman is, and Embers, they're 1,000 times better than Gemini in song and performance, but you also can't really argue with it being the last place. And that shows you how strong Eurovision has become, really. I mean, I'm just looking at the top 10 now and just the range of styles of music as well, as well as the quality of the songs. You know, so much diversity, so much geographical diversity as well. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? And I thought that even though the musical quality was really good, it felt, to me, more like Eurovision than previous years. I thought there was a lot more kitsch, but in a positive way, you know what I mean? The staging for Ukraine, for example, it was overloaded, but it was good. It was clearly Eurovision, but in a good way.
Yeah, that's it. And in a way, exactly what the UK didn't do, but at least, say, Germany did, which is just saying, you know, we've got this idea and we're going to go, you know, full power, 100% behind this, good or bad, and throw everything at it. And then you get those kind of, as you say, borderline kitsch moments. But then that's what it should be. You know, it's meant to be memorable, isn't it? It's, you know, And yet, at the top of the scoreboard, you know, arguably three very, I use big inverted commas around this, three very proper songs.
Yes.
You know, I'm making air quotes here, even though this is an audio format.
Yeah.
And, you know, that shows that even with all the tricks and everything else, you can have these, you know, native language songs in classic Eurovision languages in our top three, which is awesome as well. I mean, really cool. Those three countries at the top. I mean, wow.
I found the entire top five actually were really good for Eurovision. They were all creative. I have to say, even Iceland, I'm not a fan of it, but it was something on its own. And it wasn't a contemporary pop standard thing. This is what I never wanted Eurovision to become, like it could replace the top 100 radio stations. This is clearly not the case. We have Eurovision as its own thing still, and that's a good thing, I think.
Definitely. And, you know, that's not to say that all workshopped songs or all, you know, collaborative songs with 10 international songwriters are automatically bad.
No, that's not to say that at all.
And there is a place for some of that. I mean, look, you know, Malta, seventh place for a song that fits that, you know, international / Swedish / whatever thing. Well, yeah, okay. You know, the best one of those songs in execution and everything and content was Malta. You know, well, it was clearly a better quality thing than a Cyprus or whatever. And therefore it came in the top 10, and there's room for that too. That's absolutely fine. It should just be one of the many flavors of Eurovision. That's all.
Back to the top five. I thought these were really authentic in a good way. I know we use this word a lot when it comes to certain kind of German entries, but but all these had some unique character, were self-penned with a little bit of help from others. Like I think Switzerland wasn't completely self-penned, France wasn't completely self-penned, so a little bit of collaboration, but all the artists had influence in all those five songs.
Yeah, exactly. And influence, I would be quite sure, you know, in the staging choices as well. I mean, as you say, you know, Iceland and Ukraine are defined units, but even Switzerland, you know, he talked in interviews about the collaborative process behind the staging rather than it just being, you know, an idea imposed from you know, out of a can somewhere, you know, that doesn't necessarily fit the artist's vision. And I think, you know, okay, that doesn't always work. Of course, it doesn't always work. It's not a guarantee. You know, I'm sure, you know, Germany will tell you just as much that it was the artist's vision that was being realized there, and of course it didn't work, but you know, it's a good place to start, right? It's a good place to start. Hell, hey, even Finland, right? Okay, it's not my thing, you know, at all, despite being a rock fan, but you know, you have to say that is a band doing exactly what they do, executing it really well, and look at the result they got. I mean,
yes,
you know, okay,
absolutely, okay. Yeah, even Lithuania to some extent.
Yeah, definitely.
Interesting how this shows on the end of the scoreboard. But now that we had it for 5 years, what's our verdict on the split voting presentation?
I mean, I love the drama it involves. I do. I will say that. I think they introduced it for two reasons, really, whatever their official line. One was drama, yes. And the other was to hide some of the worst excesses of neighbor and diaspora voting, let's be honest, because that tends to manifest more in the televoting. Now, in both cases, I think it's successful, but I think in both cases we see drawbacks as well. We see drawbacks in terms of the drama because we had these really awkward zero moments. We still have this problem that the jury leader gets attention for 90% of the show, and then bam, at the end, something else comes along and takes over. And also, let's be honest, we have the problem that a lot of the juries vote pretty neighborly as well, and that is
absolutely
kind of not what they're for. Now, okay, fair enough. Nobody should be saying, hey, you are not allowed to vote for your neighbor. If five people in a room in North Macedonia, like the Serbian song, that's fine. That's natural. That's allowed. They shouldn't be not allowed to, but it's quite noticeable that the juries, you know, they're not quite as unbiased as they ought to be, really.
I just think the presentation as it is now focuses way too much on failure. Like it's presenting, oh, look, this guy got 0 points. This guy got 0 points. We never had a 0 points readout before 2016. This is new. And it was really unexpected. And we always said it's impossible with a new system to get 0 points in total, but no. Saturday proved us otherwise.
Yeah, it wasn't far away. I mean, you know, we know UK came 11th in one with one jury, but it can happen. It can happen. Yeah, I mean, I agree that, you know, we always used to say that like the cliche of Eurovision, at least in the UK, was this nul point thing. And as fans, we always said, you never actually hear that phrase said. It never gets said. But of course, now it does. Now you do hear zero. And that's a really good point about focusing on failure. I mean, I think they changed the order of the presentation a couple of years ago with that in mind, because the idea was that rather than start with the lowest score, which might be a zero, at least if you start with the lowest country, then it mixes it a bit. But of course, this year, the four lowest ones with the juries also got zero from the public vote. And when that happens, I guess there's no way you can present that isn't a bit negative. And as you say, that it did start with that. Now, I mean, Big credit to James Newman, I must say, for his response to the situation and for the way the audience and he, you know, took this moment and turned it into a kind of a celebration. You know, a different artist might have you know, might not have dealt with it so well. But you're right. It's a negative thing to focus on, and it's a tough thing to justify.
When they officially said they are doing it to make it more exciting, I already had my doubts, because actually what we have now doesn't differ too much from a system in which the winner would just be read out from an envelope. Because the thing was that it's still not clear who's going to win until the very end. And this is the same thing with reading out from an envelope, more or less.
Yeah. I see the point. I mean, I said years ago, before the system was changed, that, you know, at some level, obviously, I wouldn't want to get rid of our beautiful scoreboard and 12 points.
No.
At some level, I did say there's an argument for saying you read out the top 10.
Yeah.
No other context. You don't show the lower positions. You just start with 10th place, then 9th place, then 8th place. So by the time you get to number one, there is still some doubt as to who it could be. Like this year, it could have been Sweden, it could have been Bulgaria, it could have been, you know, but you do it that way and done with it. And I mean, in a way, you're right, it's not so different what they're doing, just with the added sort of humiliation factor for the low scorers. So I don't know, maybe. Yeah,
my point was not to suggest that they should just read out the winner, more
that they should
go back to how it was before.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm saying that I get I get what you mean about the comparison is what I'm saying. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, well, we saw. I mean, people have already worked out how this would work with the pre-2016 voting system, and I mean, basically, depending on how you define the San Marino televote, either Italy wins very narrowly or France wins very narrowly. Mm. But either way, you would have an exciting finish. That's for sure. You know, it would have been very close.
Yeah.
We haven't had one of those for a while,
yeah,
you know, with really a really close finish. So, I mean, I'm sure all the statistical gurus out there will be, you know, calculating these things for a long time to come. And, but I'm also quite sure that nothing will change, to be honest, because they seem quite fond of the drama at EBU HQ, unless the UK, Germany, Spain, and the Netherlands all complain about their treatment this year. But, you know,
there's just material to speculate about, and we can do that. But there are other things to look forward to, as it's a new year now.
It is. We are technically into the off season, but as we know, off season is just another word for the start of the on season, really.
Exactly. And I'm looking forward to hear new artist names, new themes, new host cities. That's, for me, this is the moment when I know Eurovision is really back.
That's true. We really must say, congratulations to the Netherlands and to Rotterdam for hosting this thing and for dealing with it in such difficult circumstances.
Yes.
I mean, amazing. And it's absolutely no disrespect to them to say, you know, we're also very glad that it's no longer the forthcoming Eurovision Song Contest in Rotterdam like it has been for 2 years.
Exactly.
Now, you know, it's no offense to them whatsoever to say we're glad it's over, because, you know, and especially Italy. I mean, my God, I mean, okay, you know, a Eurovision in Italy is going to be very different to 1991. Let's get that out of the way. We've seen San Remo. We've seen the, you know, the production quality there. You know, we're not talking about the same kind of chaos that will happen. Everything these days is so much more controlled from the top as well, from the EBU. However, I'm very much looking forward to the addition of some Italian flair to this mix, let's say.
Absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to this. And again, to get back to what you just said, a lot of respect also to the Dutch government, which made it possible. That was a brave decision, and we will see how it worked out in the end, infection-wise. But I think there was a real brave decision.
It was a brave decision, and actually quite a clever decision. If they're saying we are going to have, you know, a few test events in this country anyway, and they were doing it with a few sports events and a few concerts, then to turn around and say, hey, you know, it's actually quite an obvious thing to do, in a way, to say, hey, we have the biggest, you know, the biggest stage of all, we're putting on this show, you know, let's use it as a test event. But of course, yeah, it comes with risks. So, you know, yeah, brave decision.
Yeah. Fast forward again, Italy. Do you think we're getting a stage as exciting as those in Sanremo? Because, I mean, these are really, 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 really amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, not only amazing stages, but of course, what you have in Sanremo is the integration of an orchestra, always yes. somewhere kind of in the stage almost, or especially this year when they had more room to use because of the distancing. But even normally, they're integrated somehow. And I mean, let's be honest, I'm not ruling out the possibility of a, you know, an Italian orchestra being available to the artists next year if they want them.
Absolutely.
Who knows? I mean, if any country is going to do it, then it's Italy. So, you know,
absolutely.
And that would automatically make the stage, you know,
yes.
look different to every Eurovision since 98, you know.
And the word was mentioned in the winner's press conference, so it's not that unlikely.
Very curious.
So, yeah, there was a very interesting Eurovision and a really good one, I think. And it's time to get to the end of our Rotterdam coverage. What are your final words, Martin?
Yeah, that's right. Well, from a personal point of view, with you being from Germany and me being from the United Kingdom, you know, things can only get better next year, you would hope. But as a fan of the contest, I mean, it's been a great season. We've said how much we love the compact national final season. It's been great shows in Rotterdam. It's been great results, really. Partly subjectively, but I think objectively for the benefit of the contest as well. And I've really enjoyed, you know, being a little part of the coverage. I know that my colleagues, that you and she have been the ones doing most of the really hard live work, but it's been fun covering it here on ESC Go.
Absolutely.
We've had some nice words from people saying thank you for the coverage. We appreciate that a lot.
That's really a lot appreciated, yeah.
And hopefully next year we might even be on site in whichever Italian city hosts next year's contest and doing some live coverage with an endless supply of espresso to keep us going.
Yeah, so let's look forward to that.
Very much so.
Okay, so I think that was all, Martin.
Yeah, I will say my goodbyes from here.
Okay.
Cheers to everybody from this end of the line. See you.
Bye. So that was all for now. Stay tuned to esigo.com and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. And if you like, join the chat. See you.